So who with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 87. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, but maybe not too much because I wasn't there. But this week, it's all about the Rebels season finale and what's going to happen to Hera. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
We're back in our rightful places, I think, in the intro. It was so weird being the first person in the intro last week.
You can do it again on your own. Like, you don't have to do the intro every week. Maybe next week, we'll see what happens. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypebolt.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. Including, join us on Twitter December 13th for conversations with Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes about the Phasma novel, which I will tell you, out of all the Star Wars books that came out leading up to The Last Jedi, the Phasma novel was probably the most interesting, along with the Phasma comic. So I think it'll be really cool. That's going to be 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Twitter, use the hashtag #AudibleStarWars and be able to join us in conversation talking about Phasma.
Is it Phasma or is it Leia, Princess of Alderaan?
Well, Leia, Princess of Alderaan is tomorrow, but December 13th, which is going to be released after, because today is Wednesday, tomorrow's the 30th. This will be released on Sunday. Doing the math in my head.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's why we said December 13th. Anyway, join us again. I know some of you did on the first one when we did Luke Skywalker, and hopefully some of you will join us tomorrow for Leia, Princess of Alderaan. But anyway, get your free audiobook at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. We've also launched our Patreon at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include a Discord chat where you get to hear me make mistakes left and right. Join us in the recording studio so you can hear and actually join us in our conversation. So you can type to us, let us know your opinions, and we've actually referenced it on the show. Or even if we have the ability, bring you on the show and join us. We also have movie nights and After Dark episodes, which I don't know how our After Dark episodes relate to Star Wars, but somehow they always do. Mikey may take them. Mikey, I'm Mikey. I don't know why I'm saying myself in third person. Anyway, we may take them. I may make some stretches, but I will say I still stand by mine that Luke lived underneath the stairs, just like Harry Potter. So there is the connection there because it was down in, you know, it is a connection somehow, I know. Anyway, if you can't afford to support us on Patreon, that's cool. We got some awesome t-shirts and buttons available on our website, resistanceradio.net. If you don't have something to wear, like Danya has a different shirt for The Last Jedi, check out a Resistance Radio t-shirt and support us. I think it's time for the news. So this first bit of news, this week is an interesting week, Danya. I think it's an interesting week, at least for me it is. Because this week, we actually haven't had that much news, even though we're right around the corner, just 2 weeks away from The Last Jedi. But we've seen a lot of, like, little press stuff that has popped up. It's like the calm before, like, I feel like next week we're going to have all this news about The Last Jedi. No leaks, you know, I don't want any leaks to come out, but, like, just all this news, all this promotion ramping up for The Last Jedi. What do you think about all the stuff that, you know, you think will come?
I mean, honestly, for like what is gonna be coming next in the lead up, it's the same every single time. Like, we got like a huge ridiculous info dump thanks to Entertainment Weekly last week. I don't think we're gonna see anything on that scale now. We're too close to the film. I think that was the last real huge dump of information that we were gonna get. Empire do have another, they have their magazine coming out Thursday the 30th of November, which is the day after we record this, which means we're probably going to get quite a bit of information from them, but it will probably tread some of the same ground as the Entertainment Weekly stuff. Otherwise, it's going to be probably the same TV spots over and over and over again.
And that's okay. That's okay. So speaking of Empire, they released an excerpt from their January issue with a new exclusive image of Snoke. And I kind of laugh a little bit about it because it's a new image, but it's not a new image. It's Snoke sitting down in his throne room, which we've seen multiple times already, in his gold outfit. But it is a nice close-up shot of Snoke. I will say I get to see his eyebrows more than I've probably ever seen before, so maybe that's really what makes it unique. But it's the same shot we've seen hundreds of times of Snoke already for this film, and I love that it's a new exclusive, because it is a new shot, but Disney is really good at not giving anything away.
Yeah, no, even like the TV spots, like, they're subtly different, but for the most part, the actual content that we've been getting is exactly the same. With, like, maybe one line is different, or maybe one shot is different, or it's cut in a different order. Like, they've been very, very clever about the amount of information that is out there, which I kind of do appreciate, because it's just about enough for us to be able to speculate on things, but not so much as that I feel like it's going to spoil the entire movie. Like, I don't know that we've got enough to put together a timeline of events, because I feel like a lot of what we've got are very isolated snapshots of the movie. I don't think we've even got into, like, the real meat of what's going to be going
on. Oh, yeah. No, I feel, I'll be 100% honest with you. I feel like we haven't seen, I feel like, just like The Force Awakens, 95, 98% of what we've seen in these trailers and from photos is all going to be, like, from the first 20, 30 minutes of the movie. And you're like, you got to be kidding me. I haven't seen, there's nothing about any of this. Like, I'm really excited for it. Now, I will tell you, from that same article at Empire, Andy Serkis said he said this about Snoke, that he's definitely not a Sith, but he's certainly on the darker end of the Force. Without giving too much away, that begins to unfold a little in this one. So it's really interesting that we know for a fact now that Snoke is not a Sith. This also ties in specifically to the last trailer we saw, which I know you and Mikhail talked about. Mikhail did a write-up for, I believe, on Hypeable, if I remember correctly, because I wasn't here.
Trailer? Yeah.
Yeah. Luke is telling Rey to fight the what else is there. And it's interesting because Daisy Ridley was on Good Morning America on Tuesday, so yesterday, and she said, the thing about this film is the lines are less clear in terms of good and bad. Rey is trying to find out about herself and the universe, and those questions don't fall entirely to the good. So what's really interesting about this is the fact that Snoke is not Sith, and that, you know, Star Wars has always been about good and bad, light versus dark, you know, Sith versus Jedi. Like, it's been very cut and dry. The fact that we have two characters that are both unknowns to the rest of the Star Wars universe, if you will, both being kind of muddled, it makes for a very interesting possibilities of what the future can hold, if that makes sense. Especially since we're supposed to get a big reveal, big surprise, kind of like Empire Strikes Back here. Does that make you question any of opinions of where characters might go in this film, Danya?
Not exactly. I guess I always felt that Rey was going to be this kind of middle ground character. She's not quite light, she's not quite dark. She's very much like the balance down the middle. And that's not to say that she'll, like, lean one way or the other. I think that, you know, primarily she's not going to agree with the ideals of the First Order, but especially not after everything she went through in The Force Awakens. But I feel like in terms of the Force, where she's going to land isn't in a place that's necessarily purely good or purely evil. So I feel like she's going to walk that line right down the middle. Now, as for other characters, I feel like they will probably skew more heavily one way or the other. Like, I feel as though Kylo Ren is going to skew more dark side, though a lot of what we've got recently has been talking about how Snoke is a master manipulator and how he's really using Kylo Ren as a tool in order to achieve his ends. When he's not getting the results he wants out of him, he will move on to his next target in order to be able to do it.
And that ties directly, I was talking about Snoke being a manipulator, that ties directly to The Force Awakens novelization, specifically when Leia is talking to Han about, they both failed him, but it was Snoke the whole time. Snoke was there manipulating Ben, and she should have done something. Or maybe that was Bloodlines. I don't remember which one it was. No, it wasn't Bloodlines, because Ben hadn't fallen yet, so it was definitely The Force Awakens novelization. So there's definitely... It's interesting to see this characterization of Snoke kind of play out further along in the films, because he's probably the biggest, as much as people want to know whose Rey's parents are, but we know that it's Luke, Snoke is probably the biggest mystery out of all of this, which is kind of fun, because really when you think about Star Wars, it's about the villains. You have the Emperor, all the big bads are things that draw people in, from Episode 1 and Darth Maul to Vader and Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope and all of them. So it's really a fun idea to see that Snoke is going to be such a pivotal character in these films. Moving on, Daisy Ridley was recently on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and she had to do the Whisper Challenge. And Danya, what did you think about this Whisper Challenge?
Patrons will probably get the chance to hear my reaction. I did watch it just before we started recording the episode, but I thought it was kind of funny. Here's the thing. I'm not a huge fan of his show, Jimmy What's-His-Face Fallon. I'm not a really big fan of him. But I love Daisy Ridley, and this was hilarious because she's adorable and she had a lot of fun. So basically the aim of the game was that they had to put headphones on, and the headphones had Princess Leia buns, the iconic buns on them, which was great. And it's playing really, really loud music through it, so you can't hear anything. And they had cards. The person not wearing the headphones read out a phrase or name on the card that was Star Wars related, and the person wearing the headphones had to guess what that was. So it was a lot of fun. I thought it was really cute, and I absolutely love Daisy Ridley, like, so much.
I really love that she was so excited when she was able to get any of the Star Wars quotes. Like, as soon as they got a single word from the quote, like, and they were able to put it together, they knew it before. Like, obviously, they're just trying to lip read, but once they figure it out, like, they're like, oh wait, and it's all the way there, because the nice part is it is Star Wars quotes, so you're able to kind of limit all possibilities to something from Star Wars. So I was personally a fan of that. And let's see, what else do we have here? Next bit of news is from Hypeable. But it's something we've kind of talked about once before, is The Last Jedi is officially the longest Star Wars movie yet. It is 1 hour, or 152 minutes. So that's 2 hours and, what is that? I'm trying to remember what it is. 152 minutes divided by minus 120. That's an hour.
Yeah, don't look at me.
2 hours and 2 hours and 32 minutes long. 2 hours and 32 minutes long, and, now, I will say, it is a little bit longer film than some of the other ones, but I'm okay with that, because I feel like they're putting a lot of information in here, especially what we know about, like, with Finn and, Kelly Marie Tran's character, Rose. Finn and Rose going off to Canto Bight. Poe leading the resistance in the space battles, Leia being in the space battles with Poe, Luke and Rey being on Ahch-To, Chewbacca knocking Porgs over. There's going to be a lot of different things there, and that's just the resistance side. Then you have Snoke, and there's a lot of, I feel like there's going to be a lot of locations in this film, because they
oh yeah,
from all over the place. So it's I'm kind of excited, and I'm okay with the length of it. I just hope that the pacing of it, which I'm sure, of course, you know, they spend time editing it, and they gave Rian Johnson a whole new trilogy, so I'm sure it's done very, very well. But it is officially the longest film. And just to put it in comparison, it is compared to like Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, which is the first Lord of the Rings film, that was 178 minutes. This is 152. So it's just a little bit shorter than
getting up there. Yeah, right. It really is. And yeah, I mean, for me, it's going to be an interesting experience because I'll have been in work that day. I'll finish work, I'll get in my car, I'll be driving back to Wales, which the part of Wales that I'm going to at least is not my parents' place, which is about a 4-hour drive. Instead, I'll be going to Newport, which is maybe a 2.5-hour drive, depending on traffic. So I've got to do that drive, then I'll arrive at my friend's place, then I've got to get ready, then gotta have dinner and like all sorts of stuff, and then I'm gonna be going. So I'm gonna be exhausted by the time I get to the actual cinema, and then I've gotta stay awake for the longest Star Wars.
Now, is this ever on? So the release date's Friday the 15th, but I know they're doing early showings on Thursday the 14th. What are you?
Yeah, we
doing?
Get it the 14th.
All right, so you're seeing it on the 14th then, the early showing. Okay. That's what I was thinking. Well, at least, I don't know about you, but the early showings for us are like at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, it's still midnight for us. So I drive back the 13th. So on the 13th. So then when I get to the cinema, it'll be midnight in 1 minute. 1 minute past midnight will be the showing I'm seeing.
So is that 1 minute past midnight on December 14th or 1 minute past midnight on December 14th? Wow. Okay. 14th. So for us, the earliest showing is going to be, because it hits the theaters for us in the US on December 15th, but the early showings are December 14th at 7 p.m.
So yeah, we get it a day before you guys.
Yeah. So we don't have to worry about the midnight showing here. I get to.
So that said, is that 7 Eastern?
Yes.
Does that work? No, it doesn't, because it would be 7 p.m. on the 13th for you guys, not 7 p.m. on the 4th.
Yep, so you get it a whole day.
Yeah, get it. Yeah.
Unless are you seeing it on Thursday or Friday?
Thursday.
Okay. Okay, yeah, because we're seeing it Thursday, so
it'd be... So it's between Wednesday and Thursday, I see it.
Yeah, so we're seeing Thursday, like Thursday, 7 p.m. So Eastern time would be, you know, it would be midnight your time, but no, it's not a... You get to see it a whole day before me, Danya. Do not text me.
Me. Mike is like, don't talk to me.
Don't talk to me.
Don't even
really
look
sad
at me.
I'm going to be really sad about it if you talk to me and you spoil anything.
Don't worry. I will
publicly shame you and you know, call it out on the podcast if you do. So don't do it.
Yeah, I won't. I won't spoil you, because I hate being spoiled for stuff as well in return. So I won't do it.
All right. So moving on. All right. It's time for our spotlight topic. And this spotlight topic's well overdue. We've put it off a couple times because I know it hadn't aired in the UK after it already aired here. It is the season finale or the mid-season finale of Star Wars Rebels season 4. The last season of Star Wars Rebels, which I will say I love Rebels. I'm very, very sad that it's going to be, you know, disappearing after this year, but I know we're gonna have something else coming after it, so it's okay. So mid-season finale is called Rebel Assault, which when I saw the title of it before the episode, I was really excited. Did you ever play the Rebel Assault video games?
I did, yes.
Yes. And so the Rebel Assault video games was probably one of my favorite, you know, Star Wars games growing up, because it had everything. You were a rookie one, and you got to go through like Death Star Trench. Everything. It was just fun. Anyway, it was called Rebel Assault, and I thought it was very fitting because it started off with Hera and a group of X-Wing squadrons coming to the battle of, or coming to Lothal with a couple of Y-Wings to destroy the TIE Defender plant that Thrawn is, you know, I guess, building his new TIE Defenders in. And it was kind of amazing to see those X-Wings in yeah. Rebels. So, first of all, before we dive into it, what was your thoughts? Well, we'll do it this way. What was your thoughts on the episode Rebel Assault and season 4 so far as a whole, Danya?
I'm really liking season 4 a lot as something that needs to really wrap the whole thing up quite neatly, considering, you know, it's backing straight up onto the onto Rogue One, and also needs to satisfyingly tie up all of the storylines that have been going through Rebels so far. I think it's doing a really good job. They've had some like incredible episodes. This mid-season finale was phenomenal. I loved it so much. But on the whole, I've like really been digging Star Wars Rebels. And the thing with Star Wars Rebels is that it just gets stronger and stronger with each season. And I'm so sad that there's not going to be any more after this season is wrapped up. I'm not ready to let go of, like, Hera and Kanan and Sabine and Rex and all of them. Just, I'm not ready to let them go. But as in terms of, like, how mid-season finales go, like, oh my god. Like, I love that Hera has this incredible reputation for being not just a badass, but also this incredible strategic mind that they need to be at least 3 or 4 steps ahead of to stand a chance at stopping her. Like, she's so competent and so good at what she does. And Thrawn doesn't necessarily feel threatened by her, but he's always, like, really impressed by how, not impressed in a way that he's surprised, he very much is aware of her abilities, which is why he doesn't underestimate her, but he's always still very impressed when she manages to, like, exceed his expectations as well, in terms of, like, breaking through the first part of the blockade and making it through to, he'd obviously set up a second part of the blockade, because you can never be certain with Hera. She's always brushing everyone's, like, plans to one side and being like, hey, I'm just gonna do something completely crazy and destroy your carefully planned out strategy. But yeah, I love so much from this mid-season finale was that it was very much centered on Hera. And I love Hera as a character. I absolutely adore her. But seeing her going up almost alone against some pretty formidable forces within the Empire. So, you know, you had Thrawn, you had Governor Price, you had Rook, you had, just that entire strategic kind of part of the Empire working against her. And she still held out pretty much for the entire episode.
Yeah, no, she did really good. So, my opinion is, I want to dive in mine before we dive into the episode specifically. So, for the series so far, it has gotten better and better to the point where I am really sad that it's going to end. So much so that I feel like where they've left us at this mid-season finale, I have more questions now for Rebels than I've ever had before. Everything from the story arc with Kanan and them actually using his real name in the show, Caleb Doom, which we saw in the comics, with the Loth Wolf, which we thought was extinct. So, like, there's a lot of really interesting things there on that end. At the same time, we have Ezra, who is from Lothal, and is still not, you know, when you look at, like, the traditional Jedi, he definitely hasn't had the training like a traditional Jedi. He's more like Luke in that sense. At the same time, what's going to become of him? You know, there's these two Jedi that are in the rebellion, actively fighting in it, and you have Obi-Wan and Luke hanging out on Tatooine, waiting till the time is right, because he's the chosen one. You know, so it's one of those things, like, what's going to happen to these characters? Like, they're such a big integral part of Star Wars, you know, Jedi, and we don't know anything about it. Then you have Sabine and the Mandalorians and all that's going on there. And it's just like, there's so much there. Plus, you have Zeb and, his whole planet was destroyed by the Empire. But they have a new, two seasons ago, he was the one who helped a couple people from his race be able to find another planet. Like, there's just so many questions that I don't know if they're going to be able to wrap any of it all of it up. So, I'm really excited for the series so far. As for this episode, I think it really showed the strength of Hera. I felt like it was really awesome with this, how Hera was able to lead. I also liked that it brought in some characters that we haven't seen in a while. Specifically, I put a note in here that Mark Madden was in it. I don't know if you caught him on the episode.
Yes, I did.
I put a note. Yeah, so Mark Madden, if you don't remember, he was the leader of Iron Squadron, which... was in season 3, episode 8. I put the note there. And if you remember that episode, especially if you ever saw Rebels Recon with Andy Gutierrez, that was the episode where they created a character named Goots for her. So it was kind of cool that they paid and kind of brought back a character from that episode, which in all honesty almost seemed like a throwaway episode because we never heard anything else about the Iron Squadron again after that. But obviously, Mark Madden, geez, the M's are going to be confused. Mark Madden was there as part of the squadron that went down on Lothal. So I really enjoyed this episode, and I feel like it was a good fitting to the mid-season finale, because it leaves us with so many questions. And if you haven't read it, or haven't seen this episode, stop now, because I'm going to spoil a big ending to it. With Hera getting captured at the end, and her fate kind of being unknown, I will say I'm a little disappointed in the Forces of Destiny, because Forces of Destiny has spoiled that we know Hera makes it out, along with Rogue One. Hera makes it out because, she's there at Rogue One. She's also there at the end of Battle of Endor with Han Solo. So I know Hera's going to be okay. Don't know about the rest of the crew of the Ghosts, except Chopper, who's going to be okay. But I am still kind of wondering what's going to happen to her at the end when she gets captured. So, you have something, Danya?
Yeah, I'm just like, the whole like end of this episode where she gets captured and her like snarky comment of like, "Oh, Governor Price, I've so been looking forward to making your acquaintance," kind of thing. And then it reminded me so much of like Poe's snarking to Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren, yeah.
And I was like, yes, my badass X-Wing pilot's in charge. Like, that. My sexuality is X-Wing pilots, apparently. Both Hera and Poe Dameron. But, yeah, I loved it. But also the sort of calmness after Kanan, like, splits from the rest of the group to come back to save Hera. But obviously, he gets led to what he needs to do. And so when Mart actually manages to make it out and escape and gets to Kanan, he's like really apologetic about the fact that Hera got captured. And Kanan's like, "It's okay. I know. I've got it covered. It's going to be fine." So I kind of really like that. But also, I feel like as much as, like, Kanan is going to be trying to rescue her, Hera is very much, like, a self-rescuing... I guess she's self-rescuing general. Undoubtedly, she's going to manage to, like, get most of the way to being free when Kanan shows up, and she'll be like, "Where have you been?"
Yeah, no, it's going to be, it's, this episode, like, it lets each character's personality really shine through, because the whole thing between Hera and Kanan has been bubbling for 4 seasons, and at this point, it's obvious. you know, the fact they kissed, you know, previous episode ago. So that kind of helps. But, you know, it's one of those things where it makes it that it's obvious that he's there with her through the thick and thin of it, if you will. So I'm really excited to see where that goes. As we move on, though, I do want to talk about what was your thoughts of seeing the X-Wings in on the episode specifically. You know, so as the episode starts, it's Hera and her squadron of X-Wing fighters and a group of Y-Wings who are going to Lothal. They have to get through a blockade that Thrawn has set up. And it's a total of 24 ships, and they have to get through the blockade so they can go and destroy the TIE Defender plant, if you will, because the Empire just really can't build these ships because they're going to be something that can take out, you know, the rebel ships that they have. So what do you think is just seeing that scene of them in space going through the blockade?
That, like I got really, really hopeful as they broke through the first part of the blockade. Like, the whole space battle in this episode was as good as any of the X-Wing battles that they have done in the movies. Like, it was so expertly done. It was beautiful. It was well-crafted. It was visually interesting. And so when they got through the first part of the blockade, I got slightly hopeful. I was like, they can do this. They can make it all the way there. Obviously, Thrawn had another trick up his sleeve. And the devastating part to me was the rest of the group when they're, like, looking on and they're going, oh, look, here they come. As, like, you see the X-Wings breaking through the atmosphere and coming down. And they're like, wait, hold on, something's wrong. And Ezra manages to get a closer look and realizes that the entire fleet has been destroyed by the second wave of TIE fighters in the blockade. So Hera and Mott are like some of the few that actually survived. The rest of that squadron was pretty much wiped out. Which, yeah, I mean, it was impressive. Like, them getting through the first part of the blockade, that whole battle was beautifully done and just showcased, like, how great Hera is as a leader, but not only that, how great she is as a pilot. But that second part of the blockade, like that, them, like the lights kind of coming through as they broke through the atmosphere, like they're kind of falling to the ground in like a giant fireball. Like, that was devastating to me, thinking like that's a whole X-Wing squadron just gone.
Yeah, I will say I really enjoyed the X-Wing battle and trying to get through the blockade. The only thing I didn't like about it, and I will tell you, is, and I guess maybe it's just the style of how these things are done, is it looked a lot like Rogue One, which is not a bad thing by any means. Rogue One's X-Wing scene I thought was amazing in every way. It was awesome. It did bring you back a little bit to what you saw like in A New Hope or even Return of the Jedi. But the problem is it was done more than what those films were. Like, obviously in New Hope and even Return of the Jedi, dealing with 70s and 80s technology, you can't get a POV shot of an X-Wing, which is totally fine. I totally get that. But it's just one of those things where it's so exciting to see what was going on here, but at the same time, I want an animated show to be kind of like what we saw with Luke Skywalker. I want it to be like Luke's X-Wing. But I will say, I thought I was very impressed with the way they handled it, because it was very reminiscent of Rogue One and the way the X-Wings moved, the way they flew, and the shots that they chose to, I guess, cinematography for the animated show, the way they animated it to make it look that way. The really nice part about it was, you really get this sense of hope, like the way they played it off, that X-Wing assault, they played it off that they were going to get through. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to get through. Like, this is going to be awesome. They got through. And then you have Thrawn being cool and collected, you know, launch phase two. And of course, as they enter the atmosphere, that's when they get detected by enemy TIE fighters. And of course, we don't see what happens in the sky other than we have our crew of the rest of the Phoenix Squadron hanging out on the floor with macro binoculars, and they see them going ahead and fall down. you know, the whole squadron is destroyed, and we're told that some of the pilots have been able to crash land. And it's also interesting after that crash landing that you see the people on the ground, like the people from Lothal actually are telling Hera to like run, hide. They're going to be searching for you. Like yeah. they all are for, you know, the rebellion, if you will, just because they are an oppressed, you know, an oppressed city, an oppressed planet from the Empire at this point. Which is really interesting. If you actually read the Thrawn book, I know you did, Danya, that Governor Price is also in that book, and how she came to be governor of that planet by essentially selling out her family and her family's mind on the planet. So, like, it really gives you a perspective. Like, if you've read the Thrawn book, it really gives a unique perspective of what the Thal is going through, and the fact that their leadership is someone who is willing to completely manipulate you know, the goings on of her planet to her own means, which is really interesting. But yeah, so after this crash, it's interesting that Rook is the person that is sent out to go ahead and capture specifically Hera, because Thrawn knows Hera is the one who is going to survive. And I will say, we've talked about Rook on a previous episode briefly when we talked about an episode as part of the news. But Donnie, what do you think about Rook having come on as a actual character from the EU, and what his portrayal is in Rebels?
I mean, if they're building up to what we think they're building up to, then this is about to get very, very, very interesting. But so far, I've like really liked his portrayal and how he works as a character. I think he adds a really interesting dynamic back into the show. He is a really great fighter. Hera did give him a little bit of a run for his money, though, but ultimately was overpowered because he's so, like, I mean, he's assassin. It's kind of his job to be better than everyone else. But yeah, I don't know. I've really liked his portrayal so far. I mean, we haven't really gotten like a lot of him, mostly in like very small bursts, but yeah, I'm really, really liking it so far. I'm hoping that we see more of him in the back half of Rebels final season, but yeah, no, I'm looking forward to getting more of him, because so far he's been an interesting new dynamic into the show, which, you know, can sometimes be like a tough balance, a tough challenge when it's a brand new character for the final season. Before now, we've only really had mention of him in conjunction with Thrawn, but actually getting him introduced at this point.
Yeah, well, Rook was also we also saw that Rook's name was the Override Command for Thrawn's sparring droids when he was first introduced, and we're like, we wonder if that's going to be something that's big or not. And then obviously Rook gets introduced. So I'm excited to see this. And I'm wondering if Rook will show up in the next Thrawn novel. Because obviously we're going to get more Thrawn coming out. Is that next year is the release date for that? So
yeah, next year.
Yeah. So
I don't know
so,
when, but
yeah, I don't think we have I know they haven't finished final. They haven't finalized everything with it, but I know that Timothy Zahn has finished writing it and has submitted it. So I'm sure it'll be released. But yeah, so I'm excited to see Rook, and he definitely is an important character to this episode, because if it wasn't for him, Hera would have been able to escape and be joined with, obviously, Kanan. So beyond that, after that happens, after they're down on the ground, Hera meets back up with Mart, and she's able to help and save him and escape. But what is your feelings on this rest of the crew and the rest of the Lothal resistance is from afar seeing the entire squadron shot down, and they all just kind of abandon their plans to attack, which obviously I would abandon my plans too if your entire air support was just shot out of the sky. So they're leaving away, and that's when Kanan says he has to go back. He also senses a Lothal wolf standing in the road, and that's when he goes ahead and does this force break to go back. So what is your take on Kanan and the Lothwolf, Danya? Especially since they've used his real name.
I thought it was interesting. Like, the whole thing, the whole expansion of the lore here, particularly, like, the lore on Lothal, is so inherently fascinating to me. The whole idea of, like, them guiding Kanan to what he needs to do, that was really, really cool. And Kanan just accepting it, because obviously he's a little frantic at that point as well, because, you know, he believes that Hera is still alive, but doesn't necessarily know it with certainty. So, you know, he's a little frantic, a little frayed around the edges, trying to get back to, like, figure out if she's okay or not. But I don't know. I just thought the whole sequence was really interesting. In terms of them abandoning the plans, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't necessarily think that it's abandoning the plans entirely. They have to get away, regroup, and come back with another plan, which, you know, is what they always do. They will always find another way. But they can't just run in half-cocked, because that'll just end up getting other people hurt.
Yeah.
Maybe even Hera. But yeah, Kanan going after Hera was entirely understandable, because of course he would.
Yeah. I will say, Kanan going back and Hera back in the city, they do use a lot of typical Star Wars humor, which always makes me smile. Specifically when Hera and Mart tell Chopper, find the sewer hatch, and Chopper tells him where it's at, but it's being guarded by stormtroopers and an ATDP. So the walker is directly on top of the hatch. So it's like, you know, Hera is sarcastic, like, just great, you know, exactly what it is. So it's very typical Star Wars humor to have their goal being, you know, blocked by essentially something that, you know, they shouldn't be able to get through, but they eventually do, obviously with the exception of Hera being captured at the end. And of course, Rook being involved in her capture, and Kanan coming up that same hatch, but not being there in time to save her. So, with this episode, I'm glad that both you and I are on the same page, how much we loved it. What do you think is going to happen next with our crew from Phoenix Squadron? Well, what's going to happen to Hera? We know she survives, because we know she makes it to Rogue One. We know she makes it to, Battle of Endor. But what do you think is going to happen to Hera?
I mean, like I said, I think that she's probably going to figure out a way to mostly save herself. And then Kanan's going to rock up and be like, hey, I'm here to save you. And she's going to be like, yeah.
I already did it.
Yeah. Honestly, I think what's going to be the most interesting is her sort of reunion with Thrawn, so to speak. Because they have for each other this grudging respect of what the other is capable of. Not necessarily that that's a good thing on either of their parts, because obviously they're working against each other. But it's such a fascinating dynamic to me to see them interacting with each other. So, obviously, Thrawn very much wants that reunion. Like, he specifically says, you know, bring Hera Syndulla back alive at all costs, kind of thing. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because just whenever they've had a conversation and whenever they've, like, been interacting with each other, like, it's just so interesting every single moment. So that'll be cool. But yeah, Hera's not going to be there for long. She's going to break herself out. Kanan's going to rock up just to, like, give her a lift back to where they need to go. They're probably, like, Phoenix Squadron are probably going to formulate a plan. I think is really difficult for them in that Kanan's gone back to try and get break Hera out and save Hera, but the rest of the squadron need to formulate a plan in order to achieve the objective that they wanted to, which means that, realistically speaking, they can't go back for Hera. Whether Kanan breaks Hera out, they then join back up with the rest of the squadron, and that in turn leads to them coming up with another plan, is an entirely different thing. But I think as it stands, that mission to break Hera out is going to be a lone mission. I don't think we're going to see the entire team coming together to do that when there's so many other things at stake. They can't pour all of the resources into that. Doing that means that they abandon the rest of the mission.
I'll agree with you 100% on that. I think it's, you know, they're going to have to do, it's going to be a two-part where each team is going to be on their own. You know, the rest of the crew from the Ghost, and then, you know, Kanan and Hera on their own. I will say, I am a little worried about the kind of future of Ezra, because obviously, he was never in the original trilogy, but they haven't really used him anywhere else in any novels or books or any other tie-ins. So I have a feeling that we might see the end of Ezra Bridger, just because they've talked about, you know, Rebels was Ezra's story, but obviously it wasn't just Ezra's story. It was also, you know, everyone else's story as they all got tied together. You know, you can even say Hondo was in it and stuff, like, you know, enough into it that, you know, there's enough that he's there. But it's one of those things where this was his story. That's how it started out. Like, he was our protagonist, if you will. And if it ends this season, I almost feel like we might see the end of Ezra. What do you think,
Tanya? I mean, it wouldn't be entirely surprising if that was the case. Like you said, they have to wrap up the idea that there are two active Jedi working within the Rebellion fairly neatly in order for Luke's story to then make sense. Because obviously for where he is, for how influential that he is within the Rebellion, means that they will have to have lost these other two Jedi somehow. Whether that's through death or whether that's through something else, like, there's got to be, like, a finite kind of cut and dry, they're not involved anymore. And there has to be a really satisfying, clear-cut reason for why that is. And, you know, the unfortunately, the one that is the most likely is that they don't make it out of Rebels alive, which is tough because this is still, at the end of the day, this is still a Disney XD show marketed very specifically at kids. So having the death of a main character be like the end of that show is very difficult to know whether or not they'll go with that, or whether they'll be so explicit. I think it might be hinted at very heavily that they may not survive, but I don't know that they'll definitively say one way or the other.
Okay. I feel like they might have to say one way or the other. Just because even though it's marketed as kids, you know, the show obviously aims a little bit higher than young kids, but at the same time, Star Wars, we know, has a lot of death in it. Think of all the clones turning on the Jedi at the end of Revenge of the Sith and everything with Order 66. So I feel like, and Kanan has talked about that previously and stuff. So I seeing the death of Ezra, but, you know, maybe his death becoming, like, him becoming a martyr or something, a symbol or something. Like, I feel like it has to do something to lead up to the bigger rebellion or something. But who knows? Maybe he actually survived and he was at, he was off doing something else. We don't know. Anyway, any other thoughts on the mid-season finale, Danya?
I needed Star Wars Rebels to be back already.
I know, right? You got a little bit of time before it comes back. But thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
You missed that last week, didn't you?
What, with you? Yeah, of course I did.
You got to say still... the Force. You got to say the Force be with you. You got to do my part now. Yeah.
I did get to be your part. It was weird, by the way, not being the one to say and also with you. But, you know, it worked. It still happened. Which is the important part.
Take care.
Of course.